The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, 6 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 28th of November, 2023. How are you getting on? You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show with me, Greg Hughes, and you as well. We want you involved in the conversation. Start your own conversations. Get involved. The lines are open for you right now. WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25,000. If you're listening outside the Republic, it's 00353 86 60 25,000. Give us a call too. 07491 25,000. Caroline, of course, ever present. Shannon, working on the show as well. 07491 25,000. And your comments from anywhere in the world. Comments at highlandradio.com. Coming up on the show after 10, we've community garter information with the latest, and you'll hear it for the first time here, the latest appeals and information from Ungarda Síochána. Garda Grán, you're joining us for that. And there's so much more besides, so stay right where you are. Let's see what's in the papers this morning. We'll start with the Donegal Democrat. The Minister for Health has admitted certain aspects of the health service are currently not acceptable, but stressed things are improving in Donegal. Minister Stephen Donnelly turned the sod on the new Letterkenny Community Hospital last Friday morning and beforehand held a meeting with local general practitioners, with a later appointment taking place with consultants. And Sean Murphy, the manager of Letterkenny University Hospital, talks in Letterkenny, he said, were positive, with more to come. Donnelly commended the great work being provided by healthcare workers and also the work within other medical facilities, which have been a significant factor in the steps on the road to recovery thus far. There are, though, still steps to be taken, with the next locally being the €37 million 80-bed Ballyshannon Community Hospital, which is expected to be opened within weeks. Okay. On to the Irish Times now. And Dublin communities may form vigilante groups to protect themselves from violence unless the Garda crack down on thugs and far-right extremists, councillors have told Garda Commissioner Drew Harris during a tense meeting following last week's riots. Dublin City councillors complained Garda management had taken a soft approach towards the far-right and appeared to have a policy of appeasement towards them. In replying to criticism of the Garda response on Thursday's violence, Mr. Harris said Gardaí often felt their hands were tied in dealing with public order, and cases taken against Gardaí in the performance of their duties had resulted in a chilling factor or a loss of confidence amongst members. Green Party councillor Janet Horner told the commissioner that people did not feel safe in Dublin. I've heard talk in different circles of vigilante groups in multiple areas being organised in response to dangers they feel for the communities. But I mean, the majority of what happened, however you want to choose to describe people politically, the majority of what happened on Thursday, are we in agreement, wasn't far right, was it? It was thugs, not just from a certain part of Dublin either, from all over Dublin and from outside Dublin. They saw a bit of civil unrest, they saw a bit of public anger, and they thought, right, let's go and get ourselves some runners and a push bike and a scooter. They weren't politically motivated, and I would say they probably didn't really even know or couldn't articulate, you know, what they were doing or how they were doing it. I mean, obviously there is a, as it's described, a far-right element, but I don't think it is they that were responsible for that chaos we saw in Dublin last Thursday. Now, there are, of course, videos and audio files circulating calling people out to the streets, but I don't believe that's why these young people did what they did. On to the Irish Independent now, and public attitudes towards media, democracy and trust in other people in Ireland has become less positive in recent years, according to an Economic and Social Research Institute report. Socio-political attitudes born out of austerity led to public satisfaction with democracy, politics, media and in society declining substantially after the 2008 financial crash. Ireland started and finished the study period of 1998 to 2023 with some of the most positive social and political outlooks in Western Europe, but some attitudes became less positive after 2019. While the study has underscored that social and political authorities are more positive in Ireland than in the north. There has been a fluctuation over time, report author James Lawrence said. The Taoiseach reveals, the research reveals important insights into the conditions that influence social and political attitudes and citizens' connections to and trust in their society and institutions. And in relation to the media, it's really quite simple. People are switched on. People see, people feel they can curate their own news and get their own news and information elsewhere. And unless the media challenge power and ask questions that are relevant to the public and not be PR for whomever's in power, then there's always going to be a dissatisfaction with the media. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. More on Gardaí and the tools and permissions, I suppose, they have to enforce the law. Gardaí is set to be given new guidance, which will empower them to use force when necessary under plans set to go to Cabinet today. Now, I saw videos of Gardaí, or maybe their armed the rapid response, I'm not sure, or the riot police, whatever you might want to call them, with their shields out, battening people. Saw quite a bit of that. So I don't know what further powers they need or are missing something here. I'm not here anti-Gardaí or pro-Gardaí, but I did see them batons drawn and using them. But Justice Minister Helen McEntee will today tell Cabinet that the supports available to An Garda Síochána dealing with public order incidences, including clarity on the use of force, are to be reviewed. It's understood the Minister believes that Gardaí should have to look, should not have to look over their shoulder or second guess themselves in circumstances where the use of force is warranted and necessary. A government source said she wants Gardaí, who put themselves at risk, to have clear guidance on how they can use force when necessary to do their jobs. Ms. McEntee has asked the policing authority, in addition to their ongoing oversight work in the area, to review how frontline Gardaí dealing with serious public order events such as the riot in Dublin last week can be further supported. Is that something you would be in favour of? Do you think the Gardaí need more clear? It seems to be a theme coming from guards, though, that they are afraid to use force for fear of reprimand or being suspended and long-term investigations and so on and so forth. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. Right, what did I... Oh, yeah. Conor McGregor, he's been incredibly vocal. I mentioned this on Friday. If he were to stand for politics, however he might do it in this country, I think he would actually do really quite well. But anyway, Conor McGregor is now officially part of an investigation by Gardaí over alleged incitement to hatred around the Dublin riots. The Star has learned that following an examination of recent social media remarks by the UFC star, McGregor is now part of a wider official criminal probe, which was formally alluded to yesterday by Garda Commissioner Drew Harris. Commissioner Harris revealed to Dublin City Council's Joint Policing Committee yesterday afternoon that there are now three live investigations over the horrific events of last Thursday. They involved one on the stabbing of the girl, one on the riots, and another on social media commentary suspected of inciting hatred. The Star understands that McGregor, who posted to X, formerly Twitter, both before and after the riot last Thursday, is one of the individuals now under investigation as part of the criminal probe. Again, this is a very, in terms of legislating what people can say and how they say it on social media, this is also getting into a bit of a sticky spot here. You know, because who polices what you say and what you can't say? I saw his tweets, Ireland is at war, and a few other things. But if you weren't allowed to say that on social media, it would be, I don't know, it's, I think they have to, from a legislative point of view, there's certainly stuff that needs to be policed, but they have to tread carefully here, don't they? McGregor, who tweeted that Ireland was at war and you reap what you sow, has not been spoken to by Gardaí at this juncture, and a spokesperson for him did not return a comment before the article went to print. Okay, some shocking statistics coming out from Childline. This is in the Irish Daily Mirror. Childline volunteers have told of their heartbreak of listening to children complain of the monster who enters their bedroom at night. The ISPCC yesterday revealed its dedicated hotline was contacted more than 100 times in relation to sexual abuse in the last month. That's 100 kids that rang Childline because of sexual abuse in the last month. It gets an average of 26 calls on a weekly basis about child sexual abuse. In addition, 169 contacts this year were due to incest, and between 5 and 10 calls a week are from teenagers about rape. The charity also said 120,000 calls a year are classified as level 4, which is the most concerning and accounts for one quarter of their total calls. And as I've said before on this programme, I understand, I hear, and it doesn't say whether I understand it or not, I hear of the fears people say they have about, you know, the future and threats to children or whatever it might be. But there's an awful problem in this country at the moment and has been historically, and people need to get motivated and talk about it as well. When you see those statistics of young children who should feel really, really safe and protected in their homes, the amount of them calling Childline, 120,000 calls. Now, I presume some of them would be multiple calls, but 120,000 calls a year classified as level 4, which is the most concerning and accounts for one quarter of their total calls. Now, we're living through that right now, and I think that's something that we really need to get a handle on and look after our young ones. And finally, I kind of gone off watching football, i.e. soccer, a little bit now. I just find it a wee bit disjointed and messy, and a lot of it's down to VAR. I find it's disrupted the games, but things could get worse. In fact, a game of football now could last 2 hours because VAR might be used for corner kicks and free kicks. Premier League matches could turn into two-hour marathons if footy chiefs wave through plans to extend the VAR system. Extending the checks to free kicks, corners and yellow cards will be discussed at a meeting today. Lawmakers at the International FA Board want more involvement from the video booth, but the FA says the move is a step too far and it would infuriate fans already angered by stoppages and howlers. The IFAB will meet at Heathrow Hotel, and a source close to the talk said this could easily hand more decisions over to video referees. Can you imagine throw-ins and corners and yellow cards all being the subject of a VAR review? Maybe it's something you'd welcome again. 086 60 25,000. All right, that's a run through what's making some of the pages of the newspapers today. We'll be creating our own headlines after this break. Now, did you see a image grab that went viral over the weekend? Lots of people commentating on it. It's about requirements needed from GEA players before they sign up for 2024. There's 11 of them. Anyone planning trips to Australia for the summer can't be part of their senior panel for 2024. No holidays during the championship, June to October. No drinking during the championship, June to October. Pre-Christmas individual running conditioning program for listed training panel all need to be logged on an app. January to March, collective running and S&C work. Mandatory attendance and fitness test markers, pre, middle and end. And on it goes. We'll get through some of those. Well, I won't. We'll get Eamon McGee, former inter-county footballer, columnist and club footballer as well. You're still at it, aren't you, Eamon?
No, I'm finished up now, Greg. Thankfully, then when these charters are starting to come in, I'm just on the.
I'm trying to figure 1 to 11. Which one forced you into retirement here?
I think I've gone through all them rules and broke every single one of them exactly. Now. So thankfully, that's not a thing for me anymore.
Right. So looking down these rules, I mean, they emanated from the west of Ireland. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we know anything more specific than that. Maybe you know. I certainly don't. But looking down through them, what do you think? Is this the future?
I think that's the way the club game's been going now for a while, Greg, in terms of the commitment and what's to be expected. And for me, it's just someone. And listen, it turns out I actually thought this was a wind up when it initially came out, and it turns out it's genuine enough. And for me, it's just someone that's in management that just doesn't get it. Like he thinks he's dealing with 6 or 7 year olds, and we'll set boundaries. And you're dealing with adults, you're dealing with human beings, and it's just silly stuff. But we've seen this coming with the club game, and you have to take the into reality too that the club game and the inter-county game are different, and they should be different. The inter-county game now is as elite as you can make it for an amateur organisation, and the club game is supposed to be, although there's competitiveness and they want to be elite, but there's supposed to be a bit of enjoyment, and there should be a clear distinction between the two.
Yeah, but that being said, you know, see how some of the level some of these teams operate, like Glenn, for an example, would give a lot of inter-county teams are run for their money. Like the some of these club teams are operating at an incredibly high level.
They are, and there's fair enough, but they're you would think that they're operating on the level close to inter-county, but the level, the golf is massive in
right.
it, and they're still, for me, and I know people have different opinions in this, but for me, that there's still a room for that player that, you know, wants to go out for the few pints, you know, doesn't want that all encompassing, this is my life kind of mentality of sport, the elite mindset. That's the word I'm trying to get there.
Yeah, and do you think really that when you run through these, you can see, right, this is maybe a manager that says, you know, this is what I want from my players, but it's when mm-hmm. it sort of encroaches into their private lives. Do you think that's when it's a step too far in terms of the training regimes and logging? You know, there's probably some young fellas and women that would go, right, I don't mind that. But is it when it sort of starts saying you can't do this privately? Is that when it oversteps
yeah,
the line?
Yeah, and I think, and you know, there's one there, I don't know what rule it was, but in terms of what sports you're allowed to play, you're not allowed to play soccer, athletics, golf. Now, personally, I would ban the golf, just completely ban golf altogether.
But, I don't think that's got anything to do with this list, though.
But no, that's when it you have a problem, that you are going into the personal life, that you can't do this with your own time, you can't do that with your own time. So that's where I have the issue. And the tracking thing, the tracking's in already, in terms of there's apps out now for the gym programs where you type in your, then people that are monitoring the apps can tell exactly what you're lifting and how many reps you're doing. So that's there. And it's just the thing, you don't need to be, if you have a good dressing room and you have good lads, you don't need to be doing these, putting these rules and regulations about.
So I think just in a pre-convo with Caroline, you said you could see the club game going this way. I mean, is that if one or two teams employ this type of regime and they start doing really, really well, that others say, well, look, if we're going to compete, we have to do it? Or why do you think this could creep into sort of a norm?
Because I just see it from my own time with Guidor and with the different types of commitments involved in it. And it's like the arms race where one team does this and then the other team has to do this, and it just keeps escalating, and nobody's going to step back from it, because the reality is the more time you give to something and the more time you invest in it, the better you become in it and the more you give to that. And that's why I think the inter-county thing and the club should be separate. You get that in the inter-county, you give yourself completely to it, but with the club, there should still be, you know, that wee bit of breathing space. But I could see it coming in terms of, you know, there's just so many different commitments involved, and what should be told or should be pointed out also, that is not bad to commit to something.
Yeah,
I think that there's a part in society now where, you know, you're frowned about, it's frowned upon where you totally commit to something and you go about and you high achieve, and that shouldn't be kind of cast aside either, like that. But you should still have a life within that club game.
Do you think the GEA has a role in sort of looking at things like this and saying, right, we have to be careful here, because it's like a ripple effect, you know what I mean? This could eventually sort of affect participation or the game itself. Like, do you think that there needs to be a diktat coming from Dublin or the provincial councils to say, look at, you know, we need to establish the difference here perhaps between inter-county and club football?
There definitely should, but whether clubs would listen to it, like, I think a high percentage of clubs, we were in a pandemic, and a high percentage, when we weren't supposed to be training or meeting collectively, and a high percentage of clubs were meetings. So whether they listened to a diktat from Crow Park or from the headquarters is another matter, but they definitely should be coming out and leading on this topic, because what will happen, and we see it in inter-county football already, people are just saying, no, this isn't for me. And that's fair enough. If it's not for you, just walk away. But you should have the club game as that, because you love the game, you get involved, you start from a young age, and you shouldn't be chased from the club game because you can't give that whole commitment. So it should there should be definitely some kind of leadership from Croke Park.
Yeah, because if you talk to players or former players, often if you ask them some of their greatest achievements or their greatest games, even if they've operated at the highest level at inter-county level, it's often what was achieved with their club or a particular performance or a particular title which was won.
Yeah, and there's a lot of love for the club game, and you know in terms of the rules too, like you go through them players, and a lot of their best memories won't be on the field at all. It'll be interacting with their teammates, be that socially out for a few pints or just having the crack, you know, no messing about on the golf trips or whatever it was.
Yeah, what's your problem with golf here, Amy?
I mean, seriously. That's a whole show.
Have you not even tried it?
No.
And but I you're retired from football now. Come on. You need to be competitive.
I might join one of these golf societies and get the odd trip once a year in it now, but that'll be the height of it now.
Yeah, is there, someone from outside of Ireland or perhaps maybe outside the sport might think there's a booze problem in GEA, because there's an awful lot of focus on drinking. And I think even you talked about the few pints with the lads. You know, it's not tearing the backside out of it either. We're talking really about socialising, aren't we? We're not talking about boozing.
No, we're not talking about these binges. Definitely not talking about that. There's just the opportunity to go for the few pints with maybe after the game and leave it like that there. And it's just about creating that environment that there's a connections to be made, and you form a connection with that teammate. Like, and that's one of the things that I'll always have.
Yeah, and again, speaking to former players, that's often the biggest miss, that camaraderie and exactly. It's almost like fellas
that
come out of the army.
And if you create a sterile environment where you can't do this, you can't do that, and it just becomes a chore, you're not going to make them connections.
All right, okay, we shall see where it goes from here. Eamon, always a pleasure. Thanks so very much.
Thanks, Greg.
Eamon McGee, former inter-county footballer, former club footballer and current columnist there as well. Of course, he says the enjoyment is taking out of playing now. Years ago, the fellas went for a few pints after most games and had the crack. Nowadays, it's too serious. And it's the same with the women as well. Please, can the person or people in Buncrana that own a dog that's let out frequently in the middle of the night, that barks incessantly for hours, please cop on? Do they not hear the dog themselves? There are children and families, those who need their sleep disturbed by this barking echoing over the hills on a regular basis. If it was somebody out shouting every night, the guards would soon be called. Noise pollution and disturbances. Think on, please. And that sounds like someone who perhaps didn't have a fantastic night's sleep there. We had a comment into us, which we stuck on our Facebook page, and it read as follows. Hi, I'm so tired of letting cars out of parking spaces or roads, and they haven't the manners to put a finger up of thanks or a wee beep or a flash of the hazards. People used to do this. It's like people now expect you to, and people have forgotten with the COVID break how to be nice and civil to each other. No one says hello when out now or look at you strangely if you say hello. So much for friendly Donegal or friendly Irish. Do others feel this way? I don't feel this way, but it doesn't matter what I think. But they say, so then some of the comments coming from this. I let people out and I get a beep, though it's usually from the car behind me, so I then drive extra slow for a bit just to thank them. I get you. I always let cars out, and if they don't give me a thanks in some sort of manner, I'm the worst of a mood all day. Drives me crazy. As for people not saying hello anymore, I haven't experienced that. I find people are generally very friendly, but not so much on the road. Manners are easily carried. I just don't get people who would just ignore you doing something nice for them. Now, I love getting let out. But you see, when people do it like that, you know, and they wave their fingers as if to say, I'm letting you out now, hurry up. If you're going to be like that, be graceful and offer the palm of your hand and a wave, and that's how we can have our connection. Another caller says, I always wave or beep if someone lets me out, and I let people out too, and they always do the same. People are always looking for the negativity these days. They don't see what this listener is seeing. Another, I always let cats out of spaces of side roads, but if I need out of a space, oh, sorry, cars, not cats. I always let cars out of spaces or side roads, but if I need out of a space, other drivers aren't so courteous. I have spotted it, and in my head, and I'm not going to say it out loud, I do see, because I often have to say, pull into here, Highland, there is a trend as to who lets you in and who doesn't let you in. I'm working on it. I might reveal it when I have more data. But another listener says, this is something I've noticed. People don't have the decency to let people out sitting for ages or even when crossing a road. It just takes a little common courtesy. It doesn't take much to be a little more kinder. Is there an island, I seem to recall, this could be an urban myth or what have you. Maybe it's Jersey. I don't know, where they don't have traffic lights or anything like that there, and all of the driving is based on courtesy. So it's 1111. Do you know what I mean? And the drivers do that themselves. As I say, I heard that a long time ago. I'm not sure if it's a myth or not. Yes, this totally rags me too, says another listener. You wish then you hadn't bothered to let them out. It's just common courtesy to say thanks. Another, absolutely. There's such a sense of entitlement now. Manners are very much lacking. Another couple here. Yeah, and also people would barge through you and not smile, say hello, or gesture to move from one end of the main street to the other. Another, I totally agree. It's not just a Donegal thing either. I normally drive up close behind them if they don't say thanks. A few other agreeing. Why stop? There'll be, there will come a natural break in traffic. People stopping along a busy main road to let two cars out of a filling station, not worried about the 900 cars behind them they're holding up. They're even polite as... There are even polite AHs stopping on roundabouts to let traffic go. Another, yes, feel the same, very sad. And across the socials, people say that, you know, you let someone out, they've lost the manners, they don't say thanks. Let's do it on the radio if that's something you've experienced. 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Right, we are going to be talking after this break and have a conversation about government plans to fast track and expand controversial new laws to help quell riots and disorder as it deals with the fallout from last week's violent scenes in Dublin. They're going to bring forward legislation to enable facial recognition technology to quickly prosecute offenders involved in violence and looting. But does that mean it will actually just put people off even going out and peacefully protesting for fear of being screened? There are also issues with this technology because it can have biases. We're going to tease that out and so much more on that after we take these messages. Yes, yeah, so Justice Minister Helen McEntee is to bring forward legislation to enable facial recognition technology. This is to quickly prosecute offenders involved in violence and looting. The use of the technology was initially drawn up to deal with murder, rape, terrorism and child sexual abuse. However, the expanded proposals have been met with resistance, including from her government colleagues in the Green Party, who've raised concerns about the use of FRT. But I think they have calmed down a little bit now because it's a separate standalone bill. So the Greens have backed down a little in that regard. OK, so let's have a conversation about this. We'll speak to a former Garda sergeant in a moment. But first, Liam Henrick. Herrick, I beg your pardon, Executive Director of the Irish Council for Civil Liberties. I mean, some might perceive this as the government not wasting a crisis here to bring forward something that they've been itching to introduce for quite some time now, Liam.
Yeah, surely, Greg, there is a difference between, I think, the Minister and the Department of Justice who want to bring in facial recognition technology for policing and other members of Cabinet who don't, and groups like ourselves who are identifying that there's significant legal, human rights and civil liberties barriers to doing it. One of the key reasons why the government had to drop its proposals for police use of facial recognition technology earlier this year is because it may very well be illegal under European law, and the European Union is currently setting standards around artificial intelligence which may make this illegal. But I think there's not that much in the announcement this week, because, as you say, the position already was that the government was going to bring forward separate new legislation for this to be debated and discussed sometime next year.
I think what is different is that if you want to introduce something, you hang it on an issue that is very emotive in the public eye. Do you know, I don't think the timing can be dismissed here. You go, well, why? We don't want shops looted and we don't want violence. So, yeah, we're going to back you on this now. That's I'm not being cynical there. It's as clear as
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. But in terms of the stages that have to be gone through, they're still the same in that the Department of Justice is only preparing heads of bill at the moment. So that's a memo to go to government to set out its broad intention, and then the government will give them the go-ahead. And then sometime next year, the minister will have to come back to the Justice Committee with some sort of proposal, and they'll go through an examination. So we're talking about something that's still a long way off. And I think all of the legal issues about why this technology is deemed to be controversial, that it's too inaccurate, it's too unreliable, will still be there. So obviously the timing of this week is that the government wants to indicate that it's taking measures to respond to what's a very serious situation. But I think that we're still a long way from having the debate around facial recognition technology before the Oireachtas. And I wouldn't be so sure that this is likely to see the light of day before the next election.
I mean, from what I saw of the coverage at the weekend, the majority of people had their faces covered and they had their hoods down. And then I wonder if this might discourage people to legitimately protest, however you might describe that. So it's mass monitoring, right? So say, for instance, there was a 30-odd thousand people in Donegal marched on the defective concrete blocks issue. Would that discourage 10% of them who don't want to necessarily be marked as a protester, or that it could in some way, you know, infringe on a decision made about them into the future? You know what I mean? I think those are genuine concerns that at least need to be addressed by the powers that be.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on, Greg. I mean, I think there's two real arguments against police use of facial recognition technology in public spaces like this. One is that if you have a situation where everybody is being filmed, being matched against databases, that it's a chilling effect on innocent people taking part in public events and strikes and protests and so on, and even just going about their daily business, the sense that you're being surveilled and observed and tracked in your movements, you know, does change your relationship with the state. The other reason, though, is that the technology doesn't work. And there are serious concerns emerging from the United States and elsewhere that it's too inaccurate, and that it's not just glitches in the particular programs, that it's a structural problem in the technology that can't be easily fixed. So even where you have facial recognition systems with large databases, it's shown that they don't perform as well in matching women as they do in matching men, and they don't perform well at all in dealing with people of different skin color.
Is that the racial bias that people talk of?
It's a racial bias, but it's not just, I think initially it was understood that this was because the technology was initially trained on disproportionately white faces, so it wasn't as accurate with people from other minorities. But now I think computer scientists in London and elsewhere are saying that actually the technology itself struggles to observe and match people with darker skin pigments than people with lighter skin pigments. It's a structural flaw in the technology itself, which won't be easily fixed. So it leads to miscarriages of justice, but it also means that it's very useless in terms of monitoring large crowds. And as you say, you know, try to link this discussion of facial recognition technology to what happened last week. What happened last week happened on a dark November night. The CCTV cameras in some cases were turned off or were damaged. There was smoke, there was fireworks in the air, and most of the participants involved in the violence were covering their faces. So I think we need to be having a conversation about what happened last week and all of the various serious complex issues about police resources, training, and
well,
so on.
Well, you see, that's it.
Just, this is a distraction.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and I'm going to bring Christy Galligan now in a second, but that's the thing, you see. If there were more guards, say instead of 400, there were 1,200 guards on the streets, they would be able to apprehend people involved in poor activity at that time. But we could sort of say, well, really, if we had facial recognition technology, that would help. It wouldn't, because you would, as you say, you can't see them. So it does feel like a bit of a distraction rather than talking about Garda numbers. Christy Galligan, former Garda Sergeant, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
You're in favour of facial recognition technology.
Well, I see the FRT as just another tool that can be used by the Gardaí in its arsenal of crime prevention and detection. Its purpose under the legislation, and that legislation is quite a way away, as Liam alluded to, was for serious crimes like rape and child abuse, but now retrospectively includes violent disorder like what we saw last Thursday. And it is a retrospective tool for the Gardaí, and it will be used to parse the information they have instead of having to sit and look at over thousands of hours of CT phone. It's on its own is not going to solve crime. Let's put that in
there. Yeah, but we have to be really
there are
careful
many other aspects of crime detection,
of course,
including Gardaí will monitor CCTV and phones, and there will be eyewitness accounts, there will be DNA, forensic, all of that. That's all part of it. And a court, and like, let's put it, we go to the court, and the judge and a jury, or a judge on its own, will make a decision whether or not that evidence, beyond a reasonable doubt, is sufficient to warrant a conviction. Nothing about the FRT, and I think there's a lot of scaremongering about FRT. I remember I read an article in relation to the European Parliamentary Research Service that did a one on the regulating facial recognition, and it was done in 2021. And one of the things they did say, while there was concerns over the respect for fundamental rights, especially data protection, discrimination, however, the benefits brought by such technology that can actually improve security through more accurate authentication and heightened security are undeniable. But there is an issue, and no one's going to deny, the technology is only as good as the algorithm put into it. And we need to get rid of the biases within the system itself. My biggest concern...
So how do you see it being employed then, OK? So let's just say, for example, it were in place on Thursday, because this has been the catalyst for expediting the whole thing. How do you believe facial recognition technology would have improved policing or the response to those riots on Thursday? Because we can't say, well, maybe it didn't on Thursday, because this is being used as the catalyst to speed things up. So how, from a policing perspective, do you believe it would have improved the situation on Thursday?
I mean, the issue in relation to the information, I mean, to pass the information, which I already said that I have, instead of looking at thousands of hours, it takes up a lot of thousands of hours, man hours. Gardaí, that should be on the street, to be sitting behind a computer or computers, looking at iPhone or technology like that. It's about passing the information after the fact, and it would never be used in a live context. That's wrong. It's never going to be used by high, and they will. It'll be overseen by a high court judge, where permission for its use will be required. It's not just willy-nilly.
Do you not feel that it's going to mean that it's up to an individual, say it were I, that I have to disprove that that's not me? Because it's almost like that when we have FTR, and number plates, and I've got random. I got a random fine from GoSafe, the motorway cameras, whatever they're called again, eFlow. And it took me 3 days to disprove that it wasn't me, that someone had screwed on number plates on a different... I had to prove that.
Again, I just don't think FRT technology on its own will prove a case, will ever prove a case, or will ever prove anything on its own. There are other aspects of Garda investigation, as I said before, in relation to forensics, eyewitness testimony, fingerprinting and all of that, DNA, blood samples, you name it. They will have that as part of their
arsenal. I'm not a former guard. I'm not a former guard. But if I've got DNA, eyewitnesses, evidence and all this kind of stuff, and then a randomised computer opinion, not randomised, sorry, but a computer's opinion that that's my face, I actually don't... Where does that... In the evidence chain, that seems almost irrelevant if you've got all the other stuff that you're talking of.
Absolutely. And as I said, it's only another tool in the arsenal of the Garda Síochána that they're requesting.
But you have not convinced me yet. I'm coming in this, to be honest with you, whereas I have my concerns about mass of watching of people, whatever the bloody hell the word's called, surveillance, that's it. You're as a former guard, you're not convincing me at all of the actual policing benefit of this.
Well, I mean,
you just keep saying it's a tool in the armour, Christy.
It'll speed up the process of information along with other identifying features and processes. It's nothing more than a tool for the guard to search more effectively. It allows them to separate out images, but they must be satisfied for court purposes beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, it's only an extra tool in the arsenal of the Garda Síochána. I mean, no one wants to see another violent public disorder. None of us want to see that. And no one wants to see anybody taking advantage of a terrible, terrible incident like that stabbing that happened. No one else wants to see that. I'm sure Liam and everybody will agree with me. No one else wants to see that.
But with respect, I don't believe... I can't see, just in this moment, as horrific that crime is, how facial recognition technology prevents
that. Oh, no,
that
but
crime.
I mean, I'm saying people took advantage of that, and large groups of people came out onto the street. Yes, some people had covered their faces, and there is an inherent difficulty when people cover their faces of trying to identify them. Okay. That's part and parcel, unfortunately, of what we see today.
Liam, have you done a 180 in your views now?
Not really, no. I mean, I looked at the European Parliamentary Research Service. Their report, and they're saying that the EU approach to biometrics and particularly facial recognition would rest on a more or less strict legal regime. Mm-hmm. The EU AI approach appears to complement the already applicable strict data protection and non-discrimination rules with a new layer of rules governing the placing of on the market of facial recognition technology. So the EU haven't discounted it, but they haven't agreed on its use.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the European Union will be introducing the Artificial Intelligence Act sometime early next year. That will restrict the use of facial recognition technology. It may ban its use in policing completely, or it may restrict it. We don't know exactly yet. So the Irish government can talk whatever way it wants about facial recognition technology at this stage, but it can't determine what would be permissible under European law or not. I suppose the really interesting question here, Greg, is why are we discussing facial recognition technology this week when we probably all agree it's not really that significant an issue with regard to what happened last week? And the reason we're doing that is because the Minister for Justice issued a press release on Saturday night that her first response to what happened last week was going to be changes to the law she'd publish sometime next year. And again, today we're discussing what package of measures the minister wants to bring to cabinet, and this is in there. But the real questions, I think, that need to be looked at are the training of guards, because the GRA came out and said their members aren't adequately trained, that they're not clear on the law about how they can use force or not. We have questions about the management and the deployment of resources, especially in a crisis, and the ability to respond when a situation gets worse. And we have the issue of intelligence about far-right extremist groups that have been organising violent events in Dublin for the last year and haven't been dealt with effectively.
The greatest video footage that the Gardaí actually have to tackle Thursday, citizen journalists who put the camera in all the faces of the people that were involved, or many of the people involved in this. Last word to you then, Christy. Now, we've invited you on to discuss this as a former guard, but would you then agree with Liam that the more pressing issues are the number of Gardaí, the training of Gardaí, clear guidance on the use of force?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've said it time and time again. There's 138 guards that have resigned so far this year, 100 suspended. Gardaí who are on public order units here in Donegal put on standby several hours after the incident happened in Dublin. Too late. The intelligence service, I think we should need a separate intelligence service in this country to look at extremism, far right, far left, totally separate from Garda Síochána. I've always advocated that. All through my career, I might have got a fair kick in the backside for it, but I always believed in it. And what we should be doing is focus on social media companies whose products and platforms allow extremists to connect, which in turn allow them to spread hate content. Yeah. That's what we should be focusing on as well. Yeah. I think that's very important. And the guidelines, they're not following the guidelines, allowing far-right extremists to amplify those misleading or false narratives.
Well, we could have probably another full conversation on that because, no surprise, that's also in the headlines right at the moment because that's seen as the big problem. All right, thanks very much, Christy.
Thank you.
Christy Galligan there. Also, Liam, thanks so much for your time. It's always good to have you on the show. Take care of yourself.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye. Don't have time for a caller just before 10, so we'll come to our callers after 10. Where were the Army last Thursday night? Well, the Army can't be there to sort everything out, and taking the Army, there are issues people would have with that as well. Another caller says the government should look at what is the cause of public unrest instead of putting more restrictions on their rights by issuing cameras to the Gardaí, for example. The reluctance to condemn Israel for the killing of innocent people, also the murder of a young girl in broad daylight and the killer up for parole in 12 years. They should talk to ordinary people to get some common sense. Another, from what I can see, this riot plays right in the government's hands in convincing people that this legislation is good. It's not. It's deceptive and it's diabolical. We all want criminals caught and prosecuted, but not at the expense of our rights and freedoms. People are again being fooled into totalitarianism. China looking very close to home right now, they say. Right, okay. That was a long debate, so we're going to take a break now for the news and obituary notices. We're back after 10 with the latest appeals and information from Moncada Síochána.